Astronomy Cast, episode 614, Centaurs, Comets, and Asteroids. Welcome to Astronomy Cast, our weekly facts-based journey through the cosmos, where we help you understand not only what we know, but how we know what we know. I'm Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today. With me, as always, is Dr. Pamela Gay, a senior scientist for the Planetary Science Institute and the director of CosmoQuest. Hey, Pamela, how you doing?
I am doing well. It is fall here in the Midwest. The temperatures have dropped ever so slightly, but yep. All the leaves are starting to drop, which is beautiful and horrifying.
So pretty.
We're going to have to pick them up.
Someone's going to have to rake them up. Yeah. That is, I know that feeling. You like, oh, it's so pretty. And then you know with horror that you're going to be raking up those leaves. And if you don't, it just, they choke out your grass and... Yeah, I know the feeling. Yeah, we have beautiful fall leaves here as well. They haven't quite arrived, but they're probably just a week away, and it's all going to start turning beautiful yellow, and I love it.
It's a beautiful time of year, although observing is getting harder, which is where I'm just going to sit back and enjoy what has already been done and is currently being presented by folks out at the Division of Planetary Sciences Conference. And we rearranged our show order just a little bit, much to the frustration of the folks who work with us.
Right.
And we're going to talk not about Planet 9 and potentially 10 as planned, but instead about all the active objects that new papers are coming out and talking about past observations of.
Okay. Whoa. Spoiler alert. Let me do my intro before you you completely spoil the show. All right. So there are asteroids and there are comets, but there's an entirely separate class of objects called centaurs. But instead of half human, half horse, imagine an object that's half comet, half asteroid, but 100% interesting. All right, Pamela, definition time. What is a centaur?
A centaur is an object that is not a planet, that is orbiting in the part of the solar system that is between the Kuiper belt and the asteroid belt. More technically, it is generally between Saturn and Jupiter. And these are objects that we are still working to try and understand, that mostly seem to be hanging out, happily orbiting, but sometimes like to surprise us by growing tails and other such interesting activities.
It's interesting the way you define that, that it's in between the asteroid belt and the Kuiper belt, and then sort of said, well, in between Jupiter and Saturn. Because I guess the asteroid belt really almost makes its way out to Jupiter, and many of the objects in Jupiter's Trojan area are very asteroid belt like.
Yeah.
And then Saturn and its moons are very Kuiper belt like. And then of course you've got Uranus and Neptune, which are living in the outer fringes of the Kuiper belt. So there's actually a fairly small area that defines those two regions in our solar system.
And that's one of the wild things about centaurs is these are transition objects. Hmm. The orbits between Saturn and Jupiter are not entirely stable, and anything that ends up in there is not going to stay there forever. Instead, at some point, it's going to get flung in or out. And when that happens, it's either going to become a comet, it's going to become an asteroid, or it's going to disappear into the outer solar system, because all things are possible.
Yeah, even just the main asteroid belt itself, like Earth is constantly at risk from near-Earth objects. And where do the near-Earth objects come from? They come from the asteroid belt. And why do they come from the asteroid belt? Because Jupiter is constantly kicking them out. And then they're drifting into the inner solar system and smashing into the Earth and killing all our dinosaurs. And the same thing is happening with these interactions between Jupiter and Saturn that keeps everything really dynamic across the solar system.
And the wild thing about centaurs is while they seem to be icy objects, they don't all act identical. So trying to understand why some of them have these tails and jets and comas, and others of them are just hanging out being completely quiet, becomes difficult because if you assume they all have kind of the same composition, it can't just be thermal heating from the sun that is causing some of them to be active if others of them aren't.
And so you talked about this idea of these perturbations coming from Jupiter and Saturn, and I guess lesser some of the other outer objects. So is Jupiter driving asteroid-like objects out into the Centaur area, or is Saturn pushing cometary objects into the Centaur area, or both?
It's even weirder than that.
Oh, man. Okay.
So things come migrating inward for a whole lot of different reasons. You can have interactions between multiple small icy objects in the outer solar system that lead to objects getting flung our way. You can have perturbations from Neptune, Uranus, Saturn. You can have all of these different things happening at different times. And you can even have things getting flung in from the Oort cloud, as we've recently observed. So we get objects trapped in orbits between Saturn and Jupiter through a whole lot of different, well, interactions. And at the end of the day, that's the only thing we can really say is in common, is all these things interacted with something, and that interaction led to a journey inwards.
Right. So then if we were to go and fly out into this region and take a look at these objects, what would they look like? I mean, at this point, I think we've got a lot, you know, in our mind, we can imagine the flybys of some of the asteroids that have been done, the flyby thanks to ESA's Rosetta missions. We've seen comets up close. We've seen asteroids up close. If we got to a Centaur and looked at it up close, what would we see?
This is actually more of a mystery than we'd like. I mean, on one hand, they're going to look like snowballs that happen to have some gravel mixed in and some organics. They're dirty snowballs.
Right.
But just like snowballs can be badly made and fall apart in your mittens, or end up nice and round and compact, or just all sorts of crazy shapes based on, well, what gloves or mittens you happen to be wearing. Those interactions in the outer solar system can lead to, we presume, these objects having all sorts of different shapes. The one thing we think we know is that they're not perfectly round. These things, we think, have topography.
Right. I mean, you say these things we think have topography, but I mean, we saw the photos from Hayabusa 2, right, and OSIRIS-REx. Like, even tiny little 10-kilometer across asteroids have weird topographies. It's kind of amazing how much more bizarre these objects are than anything we ever expected. But again, you know, when you say topography, are we talking like mountains, craters, strange little diamonds?
So what we're talking here is slopes that allow them to have landslides. And one of the leading theories on why some of these things become active periodically is they have landslides, and it is this action on the surface of the object that reveals fresh ices and allows them to temporarily become active. Exactly what causes the landslides? Well, that's another question. But the leading thinking is you have these objects, they can settle into nice, happy orbits for millions of years. And while on those orbits, they periodically get a little closer to the sun, a little further from the sun. And during their initial passes to their closest point, they, well, melt just enough to have these landslides and just enough that we see this activity.
So then this idea, right, that you've got these objects, they're getting impacted, there's some kind of landslide activity, and it's like revealing fresh material that is then going to make it act like a comet.
Right. So you can have trapped in minerals, trapped in matrices, all sorts of volatile gases. And it'll happily stay trapped there until you do something to expose it to, well, sunlight. And if you have a landslide, that can expose some of these previously buried volatiles and allow that, well, surface to become active.
It's really interesting. Like when I envision a comet, you're sort of imagining this pristine object that is from the outer solar system, and it makes its way in, and for the first time, all of this outer area of, well, whatever volatiles are able to be reached by the radiation from the sun start to gas out and blast off into space. And then you're left with the dirt part of it that is now sort of encasing the comet, and no more of it can escape. And the longer a comet spends in the inner solar system region, the more and more of it is going to be gone. But if these things are having ongoing activity, which is like, now that I think about it, it's like, duh, of course they are, that they're constantly being resurfaced and refreshed. And so are they then just kind of getting smaller and smaller over time and getting more concentrated to become more rocky?
Well, the wild thing about centaurs is they become temporarily active.
Yeah.
And then never again. So you can have a centaur that is on an orbit that on its first few passages, when it gets close to the sun, it gets warmed up enough that it actually goes through a phase change that most of us don't think about. When we think of ice, we think of ice as being crystal. But it turns out that in the deepest parts of our solar system, you can actually end up with what's called amorphous ice. And at a certain temperature below standard liquid water freezing, you can end up with the amorphous ice undergoing a phase change to become crystalline ice. And in the process of that change, which isn't enough to generate the kinds of tails and things that we see with the standard comets we're used to, these objects out past Jupiter can change so that they release a bunch of gases and other things and allow us to see them temporarily as active. But it's a phase change from amorphous ice to crystalline ice that's taking place, not your standard, well, more melting that we're used to seeing.
We got to spend a little more time on the term amorphous ice. Like, if I could look at amorphous ice up close, hold it in my hand, put it in my scotch, what would it look like?
Extremely cloudy. Your scotch would probably be frozen because you're at a much lower temperature than we're used to being at. So putting it in might be interesting.
Yeah, okay.
But it doesn't have a crystalline structure. The water molecules are not politely aligned. Instead, they're in all different angles. And within this randomized structure, there's gases trapped that can then escape during the restructuring to be crystalline ice.
Right. So, you know, again, like when I sort of think about regular ice, as you said, it forms these crystals when you break it. It shears in various ways. And I can imagine like this very cloudy material that if I like dropped it, it would just smash into powder because it didn't build that crystalline structure. And it would be quite readily hiding all of this material, these other gases and stuff inside of it. It'd be really weird to see.
What we're finding with these centaurs is we have this phase change from amorphous to crystalline that is making them appear active. We have landslides that are revealing pristine materials beneath that are making them active. Just the yanking and pulling of interacting gravitationally tidally with these worlds can make them active. But all of these are one-off temporary things. So at any given moment, you can look at a centaur and it's sitting there going, "Hi, I am doing nothing. I have nothing interesting to see." And there was actually a researcher, Eva Lilly, who went out looking for active objects and found none, because the objects she looked at were in stable orbits that they'd been in for too long. And all the activity had died away.
If we could like roll back the history of the solar system into the ancient past, can you sort of describe the I don't know, the lifetime of a centaur? Like, where did it form, and then how did it shift around, and what is its final outcome?
So centaurs started out in the outer Kuiper belt, the Oort cloud, the space in between. They were formed in the outer cold, cold parts of our solar system through interactions with one another, with the gravity of passing stars, through some sort of dynamical change. Their orbit flung them inwards, and one interaction at a time, they made their way to that space between Jupiter and Saturn and had their orbit somewhat circularized through these interactions. Now that they're settled in between Saturn and Jupiter, it's a temporary journey for them. They'll be there for millions of years, maybe less. And while they're in there, they might get impacted. They're going to end up with landslides and all these other things. And then Jupiter will either fling them inwards or outwards.
Now, obviously, I'm a little familiar with centaurs. We've reported on them quite a bit on Universe Today. Are you familiar with Tartaclo, which is one of the centaurs, the one with a moon and a system of rings?
Yes, yes. I had no idea how to pronounce its name. So when you said it out loud, my brain was like, I do not recognize that. I learned something new.
I could have mangled it too. So don't put all your eggs in my pronunciation basket this time around.
Right. So this is an object that appears to have had a slightly brutalist past. There was something that went on that caused it to end up with a moon in orbit around it, a plane of dust and particulate material that forms a ring. And it shows us, which we already knew, that as empty as space may be, things still find a way to hit one another. But if you have enough gravity, you can hold on to your bits even after they fling off your surface.
Yeah, to think that there's an asteroid with rings
is crazy. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it really is. All right, so, you know, we're familiar through your telescope. Tell me about all the plans to send missions to visit these centaurs.
So, missions to specifically visit centaurs are not entirely in the works, but we come close with Lucy. Lucy isn't going to go out to the centaurs. It's instead going to the Trojans, which are a family of objects that may be very similar to the centaurs, but gravitationally, dynamically, they are trapped in the leading and trailing Lagrange points orbiting with Jupiter around the sun. And these objects, Lucy's going to fly out and visit a bunch of them and do these crazy figure eight orbits relative to Jupiter. It's going to get to go see a regular asteroid, and it's launching, we hope, in about a week.
Now you're breaking your rule, Pamela.
I know. So normally we don't talk about spacecraft before they have successfully launched and gotten to their destination, simply because, well, it seems wrong to count your eggs before they hatch. And as some of you know, I did have a mission I had counted on for my dissertation fail to function, and I had a telescope I had counted on for my dissertation fail to be fully functional on time. So around AstronomyCast, we're pretty good about not talking about things.
So now I understand. Now I think I understand where the personal pain comes from. See, for me, talking about stuff that's going to happen is like my bread and butter. It's nothing I'd rather talk about. But out of respect for the devastating losses that happened to you, we steer clear of this until these spacecraft are firmly in orbit and have sent back the data. So who knows what's going to happen? But you know, Lucy is fascinating if it may or may not launch, may or may not get its data. But we've had a couple of other cracks at things that are centaur-like.
Yes. So New Horizons.
Okay.
Kuiper Belt is fairly similar because Kuiper Belt objects get flung inwards to become centaurs. So there's that.
Yes. And Saturn's moon Phoebe is thought to be fairly similar to a Kuiper Belt object and, sorry, a centaur. And Cassini has taken some wonderful close-up images of the moon. And it is so weird looking.
And this is where we have to recognize it's a continuum of objects out there. Just this week, a paper came out highlighting the fact that there is an object that we thought was an asteroid in the asteroid belt where asteroids belong. And that object is not an asteroid. It is a comet that is on an elliptical orbit through the asteroid belt that is sometimes further from the sun, sometimes closer from the sun, and will grow a tail, which is not how asteroids are supposed to behave.
Right.
And this continuum of objects, it's all a matter of where did it form? If it formed close enough to the sun, all the ice and stuff got blasted away. If it formed further from the sun, it still got the rocks and dust in it, but it kept all the ice and gas and became an icy, gassy, frozen object. It's a continuum.
The thing that I'm finding really exciting, and this is one of those stories that I think has transformed as we've been doing Astronomy Cast over the decade and a half period of time when we started Asteroids Were Asteroids and Comets Were Comets.
Right.
And we've since discovered that there really is a blend between what is an asteroid and what is a comet. And even things that are very firmly in the asteroid camp, things like Bennu and Ryugu, clearly have a lot of volatiles just under the surface. And it's pretty exciting that, you know, obviously there's like a store of the early history of the solar system, but also resources that we can use when we become our solar system spanning civilization, that the water and the volatiles that we require are there. And to see these objects that are firmly right in the middle, both of, I guess, the solar system, but also of just the classification, gives us a really great way to sort of see this transition between what is a comet, what is an asteroid. And as always, things are a lot more complicated than we ever expected.
And one of the biggest changes since we started recording the show is the understanding that Jupiter is an equal opportunity rock and ice thrower.
Yes.
Research by our friend Kevin Grazier showed that it's going to fling things both inwards and outwards, both aiming at us and protecting us. And this dichotomy was just absolutely not known.
Yeah, I mean, this idea that Jupiter protects us. You see this a lot on the internet and such. And it really grinds my gears because it is not our protector. It is both protecting us and harassing us. All of the near Earth objects that are coming our way have been kicked into the inner solar system thanks to Jupiter. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of protector is dropping Tunguskas on us or dropped the
Chicxulub?
The Chicxulub event, right?
Right.
Yeah. Thanks, Jupiter, for killing all the dinosaurs. So anyway, I think it shows just the level of dynamics. And there's always a chance, right, that Jupiter can kick one of the larger planets completely out of the solar system because it can if it wants.
Yeah. Yeah, and our solar system did start with many more planets than we have today. And in our next episode, we're going to be talking about the possibility that there could be a Mars-sized object, according to a review paper by Katie Volk. There could be a Mars-sized object still lurking, flung out into the, well, outer parts of the Kuiper Belt.
Or many more.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Pamela.
Thank you so much, Fraser. And thank you to all of our Patreons who made this show possible. We are here thanks to your generous contributions. This week, we would like to thank Thomas Sepstrup, Mountain Goat, Jordan Youngbury, Gowan, Kevin Lyle, Jeanette Wink, Andrew Palestra, Brian Cagle, Venkeshta Chari, David Trogue, the Giant Nothing, Aurora Lipper, Joe Hook, David, Gerhard Schwarzer, Jean-Francois Ojette, Coco Sarif, Just Joe, Laura Kettleson, Bill Hamilton, Robert Plasma, Les Howard, Jasoa Pearson, Jack Mudge, Joe Holstein, Sean Martz, and Gordon Dewis. Thank you all so much. And if you aren't contributing, well, we're going to be having our Hangout-a-thon, which is how we make up the difference between what we bring in through Patreon donations and what we actually need to pay all of our bills. We're going to be doing that on October 23rd and 24th. So show up and, well,
hang
show
out.
Us you love us.
All right. Thanks, Pamela. We'll see you next week.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Astronomy Cast is a joint product of Universe Today and the Planetary Science Institute. Astronomy Cast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution License. So love it, share it, and remix it. But please credit it to our hosts, Fraser Kane and Dr. Pamela Gay. You can get more information on today's show topic on our website, astronomycast.com. This episode was brought to you thanks to our generous patrons on Patreon. If you want to help keep this show going, please consider joining our community at patreon.com/astronomycast. Not only do you help us pay our producers a fair wage, you will also get special access to content right in your inbox and invites to online events. We are so grateful to all of you who have joined our Patreon community already. Anyways, keep looking up. This has been Astronomy Cast.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.